everyone. Welcome. I'm Carrie L., and this is Carrie L.'s Heartlink Show. And as I connect to as many hearts as possible, we are creating more freedom, light, and love, one interview at a time. My programs will bring you insights into the great awakening that is underway on planet Earth as we approach the wonderful 2012. I'll keep you abreast of the latest tools available for anchoring a greater and healthier reality into your life. I'll be interviewing leading-edge experts in the metaphysical, scientific, paranormal, and spiritual realms. Stay tuned for the next hour as I speak with a real live alchemical woman. That's Dr. Ramona Rubio. But before that, I'm just going to introduce myself and what I do. I am a transformational coach, counselor, and educator. And you can go to my website at www.heartlinkinstitute.com and learn about the offerings I have. I will be teaching classes in coaching and counseling, helping to train others first to help themselves and then to be able to help others. So check out all that's offered. I also have created the Crop Circle cards, which is an oracle, and you can access information using these cards. And so check that out on my website. And also there are a number of offerings coming up. We'll have our next, we just had a wonderful workshop, and I want to thank all the participants in the Good Vibrations Blueprinting workshop we just had. We'll have another one come November 1st. So maybe if you're in the San Diego area, you can join us. That would be great. And now, just take a deep breath. Allow the sacred love to flow through you. And the blessing of the day comes from the Gayatri Prayer. Let us focus on that effulgent light from which the whole universe is projected. May this inner sun enlighten our minds and hearts. And may we awaken as that light. So let me introduce my guest today. I'm so excited. This is a very special woman who has put together a great book that I just finished reading called The Alchemical Woman. She co-authored that. And that is Dr. Ramona Rubio, who is devoting her life to helping others as a life coach as well. So we have a lot in common. And she has her doctorate in mythological studies from Pacifica Graduate Institute in Santa Barbara area. And she uses story as a portal into life transitions. So I'm really excited and happy to introduce Dr. Ramona Rubio. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Ariel. I'm so happy to be on your show.
Well, you know, I just finished your book, and it's so well written and so easy, and I always like that. I mean, that helps me. You know, I'm reading a lot of books these days.
Oh, I bet you are.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, what is alchemy? Could you give us a explanation first off? What is that?
Yes, I'd love to. I think the common, if it is such a thing as a common idea of alchemy, is about these ancient people, men and women, who were devoted.
And Dr. Rubio, I'm going to ask you to speak up.
Okay.
I can barely hear you.
Okay, how about now? Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Alchemy is about the basis of what most people understand it is changing base metal into gold. That these people were devoted into looking at how they could work with nature and somehow infuse magic into this transformation. But as what we've discovered, my co-author Dr. Davidson and I, along with following the studies of the psychologist Dr. Carl Jung, was that the alchemists not only were looking at changing base metal into gold, they were also looking at changing their basis experiences, their basis inner self, into alchemical gold, into that golden person that they knew they had to become in order to do the work of transformation. So it's a beautiful metaphor for doing our soul work as well as for them doing their work in their physical laboratories, changing these different metals and substances into gold. So it's a beautiful twofold way that they were doing it. And alchemy, there's a myth too that goes along with alchemy, that it may have come from Atlantis and that it's over 10,000 years old. And then there's the more documented story that it originated somewhere in Egypt, and they don't know exactly how many thousands of years ago, but our particular studies are based on about 200 A.D., and specifically the woman, Maria Hebrea, that inspired us was a very famous ancient alchemist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was fascinated by her, her energy and her red robe,
yeah.
Red cloak.
Uh-huh.
And all the stories that you tell in your book, they are fascinating.
It is a very fascinating study.
Well, first I want to ask you about your story before we really delve into the five stages of alchemy or alchemical changes. What can you tell us how you ever got involved in all of this?
Well, you know, we have so many twists and turns in our lives, and I was working full-time as a dispatcher in a police department in the Los Angeles area. And during that time, I had been writing scripts and looking to see how I was going to revision myself, what new story I was going to write about myself to see what my new adventure would be. And along that line, I got this brochure in the mail that had to do with Pacifica Graduate Institute and that they were starting a mythology program. And I thought, wow, this is wonderful, but it didn't seem like it was for me because I hadn't finished my undergrad degree. I hadn't done any of that. So I thought, well, maybe it was for my significant other, who he and I were both studying mythology at the time. Well, that night, right after I got the brochure, I had a dream, and in the dream, for those that know Joseph Campbell, he was in my dream, and he was inviting me to come to be with them, and saying, we've been waiting for you. And so when I woke up in the morning, I said, wait a minute, that brochure and Pacifica is for me. It's not for my partner. It's my story. And so from there, I did all I could do to get all my undergrad degree finished, and the next year I started up at Pacifica Graduate Institute. And there, where I studied mythology, was where I was introduced to this whole realm of alchemy, and the pictures and the emblems that were so bizarre and foreign to me absolutely just grabbed me, and my journey began in the world of alchemy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know you had some difficulties in your childhood, and would you say that those were necessary for you to develop this interest, or, I mean, how would you assess that?
Well, I think for all of us, there are definitely things that come into our lives sometimes at a very young age, and there aren't too many things that we can do about it, you know, because we have that helpless feeling that we're children, and for me, I was molested, and it was a very difficult time. But what I realized, and you know, we don't know where this insight comes from, but for me, I realized that I couldn't be stuck there as a young girl in the victim mode, that there was something more for me, and the support that I had from my parents really helped, and that I was an only child, and that helped in the way that they nurtured me through all of this trauma to be able to to somehow within me know that I was so much more than what had happened to me. And I think that that led the groundwork for me to know that I, even though I was raised in the barrio and I'd never really thought of getting my doctorate or even a master's, that the fact that I was able to overcome such difficulties in my young life gave me, I believe, the strength and the tenacity to really believe that if I really put my mind to it and believed in myself that I could do it. And I think that's how I was managed to work full-time, take care of both my parents. My father passed away during my schooling and then went to school full-time. So I think that's what laid the groundwork, and I think you're right, that laid the groundwork for me to know that I was much bigger than all of the problems and challenges that had come into my life at a very young age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think some of the best healers really are the ones who had been wounded and come through the other side, maybe having breakdowns, but then making it to the breakthroughs.
Right, right. And that's what we talk about, and that it's so important for us that when we do have these major trials in our lives, is that they do break us down, but they also are a point where we can break through to are the essence of who we really are and claim that power for ourselves and not live a story that somebody else has written for us.
Exactly. Well, what are the five stages, the five alchemical stages? And you know, I kind of want to find out right away about those because then it can set the stage for us to go into some more depth.
Oh,
but just briefly, what are those?
Okay. The way that we set up the book and looking at alchemy, we did set it up in the five alchemical stages. They're not in the order of how life and challenges occur. They're in order just so that it made it easier for us to design the book and give insights into these different stages.
It's a dynamic process, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely dynamic, Carol, and it's ever-flowing and continuous from the first breath to the last breath of our lives. So anyone, regardless if you're a man or a woman, you're on an alchemical journey of transformation. You are creating your soul story that will inform who you are as an individual, not only to yourself, but to those around you. So it's a very dynamic and wonderful, exciting process that has these five stages that we believe are pretty full in describing the human experience. So just briefly then, we have the first step in the book we call Negretto. And Negretto is blackness. And just to give you a hint of it, that's where we experience loss, death, depression. This is where we are stuck in a very dark, almost motionless position in like a cave. So that's Negretto. The other next step is Lapis, and that's blueness. And Lapis is so essential for those of us that are moving out of that dark place, that where we wash the mud of confusion out of our mind. This is where baptism and transitions occur. That's blueness. The next stage is albedo. And albedo means whiteness. And that is the white of day, the brightness of day. That's where you get revelations and insights. This is where we ascend to our higher self and really get to know more about our life's purpose. So that's albedo. The next stage is citrinitas. And I realize that some of these names are going to be foreign to many people, but we're hoping that as this becomes more popular, that people will feel much more comfortable with these words. So this stage of citrinitas, which is yellowness, that's the juiciness of life. That's where we dance. That's where we copulate, where we have the sex and babies and changing diapers and all of the stuff of life. That's that richness, okay? That is citrinitas. And then the last stage, stage number five, is rubedo. And rubedo is redness. That's life blood. That's where we are fully living in our presence. As the alchemists would say, what is in the inside matches what is on the outside, and the term they used for that is conjunctio, and it's like a joining, a conjunction of joining what your soul self is with what your persona on the outside is. And we can have these moments. We don't have to live in them all the time. But any one of these stages can be activated in our lives depending on what's happening to us. If you have just found out that you have gotten the job that you've been dreaming about, or that you've got a contract that you knew belonged to you, you're going to be absolutely married. You know, you're going to be married to your creativity and your ideas. That is the fullness of rubido. And what happens in our lives, Curiel, is that these incidences or these experiences will inform us what stage we're in.
Fascinating. Would you say, can you determine right now, and maybe I'll be putting you on the spot, I don't know, what stage you're in? Where can you give us an idea of what you mean by that?
Well, yes, I can. And I'll just I'll give you an example that happened about a week ago, and this is how these stages can interact all in one day. Mm-hmm. So we're not saying that you're going to be in one stage for a whole year and then you transition and now you're in another stage.
Mm-hmm.
These are so dynamic and so active that they affect us on a daily basis, sometimes, sometimes not. So, for instance, I had some visitors come over, and they were from Stanford University, and I was so excited because I felt that I could introduce alchemy, as we're talking about today, to these young scholars, that we could do maybe some type of a program, social networking, interacting. I don't know. My mind was going just really all over the place with creative ideas, and I was so excited. And they had just arrived from a trip to Europe, so needless to say, they were very tired. And Ramona was very excited. I was in such a high energy level that I had to find a way to, de-energize myself, if that's the word, because they were so tired, and I had to match where they were. So what I did is that I calmed myself down because I realized that I would be overpowering their physical situation with my excitement. So that was rather discouraging for me at a point because my expectations were so high. I definitely was in that rubido, so excited. And when they left, what happened to me, and I didn't realize, because we still got a chance to talk, but it wasn't to my expectations, and which is what happens many times in our lives, that when they left, I had to deal with I felt almost a despondency or a seeping in of depression that put me in the negretto. And you wouldn't think that here I am in the rubido with all this potential, that I'm sitting there and I'm feeling like the energy is just oozing out of my pores and that I am now falling into this dark space. Well, fortunately, I caught myself and I realized what was happening to me, that because of my expectations, I set myself up to ooze the energy too much, too quick, and then I was in that negretto stage. But then I had the insight, because that's what the negretto does to us, that when we're stuck in that just a dark space, that's where the epiphanies of life come. That's where we get insights into what's the matter with us. And if we are brave enough to stay there and listen, we'll get the message that gives us an insight to move onward with our life. And for me, what the message was, that I had to be gentle with this idea of alchemy, and that it would all unfold at the right time, and I was trying to force it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big no-no, that we just don't do that. And so I needed to not only respect my visitors, but I had to respect alchemy and the ancient history that it has and how it will unfold in its right time. So I learned a huge lesson, and there we have I got out of it, and then I felt so much better. I went into the state of albedo because I got the insight that I needed, and I could then start to ease off of this dark space.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect, because I was going to ask you, well, how can we apply it to our real lives? What's the practical application to just dealing with everyday living? And sometimes with, you know, we all get stuck on occasion.
Oh, more than what I'd like to admit to, Gabriel. And I'm a realist, and I find that as I do this work, and I'm an active alchemist, that the more I do this work, the more I am aware of how beautiful the human experience is that brings us these challenges and brings us these gifts. And the beauty is if we can embrace it all, not, you know, beat ourselves up because we aren't in the albedo or the rubedo and flying with the angels, or, you know, being whole with our whole, you know, with our sense of our greatness. But it's also being in that transition where we just don't know what the next step is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay too. So it's a very forgiving system of understanding our human experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you offer keystones, you call them,
right.
Suggestions for getting unstuck. And can you go through some of those, you know, especially when we do have difficult times, how do we get unstuck?
Well, I think, again, the most difficult time and yet the most courageous time that we can have is in that negretto, that blackness stage. But I think one of the first things that anybody needs to do when they find themselves in depression or in a state of stuckness where they just don't have any hope at all is, first of all, is to acknowledge that they're there. And I think sometimes we say about naming the monster, if we give the monster a name, it diffuses its hold on us. And I think that's what is so important, especially in the negretto stage, is to be courageous, but to name that thing that has us in our clutches, and in their clutches. And so if it is something that is a death, where we have experienced someone that we love that has died, it's to know that we need to mourn them, that we need to be in that space where we feel that depth of loss. And doing that really helps in the healing. And to ask others, those our friends and our family, to give us the space that we need to mourn either the loss of a loved one, the loss of a job, the loss of when we feel the creativity that we once had maybe is not there. Whatever it is that we're sensing and feeling that throws us in that depth, we ask those around us to indulge us, to give us that time to contemplate what is the matter so that we can have a healing that takes place instead of denying it and wanting to put the proverbial happy face on and pretend that nothing's wrong, only to be stuck even further in the cave. So that's what's so important for it. And the two main keystones is to recognize what has us in their clutches, to give it a name, and to ask indulgence of our friends and family to let us mourn whatever it is that we're mourning at that time.
Well, now you've made me think about our contemporary world and what's been going on, and it's not such a pretty picture right now. And maybe some of this information, these keystones, can help us with getting unstuck and depression over our world, you know, it's going through so many chaotic changes.
You're right. It really is. And I think one of the things that we need to be very protective about is just how much we're willing to turn the television on or to listen to the radio, that it's just filled with what I call negretto moments. They're just blasting us with all the horrific things that are going on. And I think earlier we had had a conversation, or you had had a conversation with the gentleman about the fires in California. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And I think he really had a very interesting take on it. I was unusual because that's not normally what we hear. He said, you know, I'm in the middle of it all, but he said, I just can't take it all in as awful as they say it is, because many of us are not affected by that. It's more of a news hype, more of a news media,
trying to get us into fear and control us that way. That has been certainly a pattern that we've witnessed over and over again.
Absolutely. It's why don't we have the airways filled with joy and the prosperity that it can be ours, instead of all the things that are keeping us locked in that cave, or wanting the media inadvertently is just feeding that monster of fear and lack and limitation. And you and I both know that the world and the universe has everything that we need, but it is kept away from us either psychologically, emotionally, or because there is this idea of the lack and limitation that we're constantly bombarded with. Mm-hmm. And then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, and to get unstuck on a personal level, we really do have to know what our limiting beliefs are, and what we're telling ourselves, that we're not good enough, or that we don't deserve to have a happy world, or whatever those beliefs are.
That's correct, and I think that, and I'm an advocate of a healthy ego, but I also know that our egos can also work against us. To say exactly what you said, the self-esteem thing, we're not good enough. And when we're trying to prove that we are good enough, then that's where we get into these bizarre activities and competition, gossip, all that, the toxic relationships that we start to embrace just to make us feel better. Mm-hmm. So what we really need to do is this inner dialogue with that soul essence of ourselves. This is this alchemical journey where the golden woman within is waiting for us to acknowledge her, that she will tell us, you are good enough. Your greatness is waiting for you to claim. And it's not greatness to be, the president of the United States, or to, be the head of your class. It's the greatness to be you. And I think that is our major life purpose, I believe, is to be ourselves. To be ourselves and whatever richness embodies us, if whatever talents we have, whatever joy that we carry in our life, to share that and to share fully that we are enough just as we are. We don't have to be the model on television. We can just be like me. I'm 5 foot tall and a middle-aged woman that is embracing the fact that I love my life. I love the fact that I have a story that I have written about myself, but I also have a new story that's unfolding for me as we're speaking.
Mm-hmm. And one of the stages, we take a mirror to ourselves. Which one was that?
That's a negretto, and I think that's again, the most difficult, because that's where we're asked to look in the mirror of truth and to really look at ourselves to see what is the matter, what kind of mask have we been wearing that are not true, that have not nurtured us, that we are not living in integrity. And what we see sometimes is not very pretty, because we have avoided really being ourselves, and we put on what the depth psychologists call false personas.
Mm-hmm.
We put on false identities about who we are, because we're afraid that if people would really see who we are, they wouldn't like us. But I believe that when you're vulnerable and you're you, that there's such a genuine feeling that when someone's authentic, it's very intoxicating.
It's true. In fact, the more vulnerable we are, the more likable we are.
I think so, too. There's nothing worse than a smart-aleck person that knows everything. How can you befriend someone that is so busy talking about themselves that you never get a chance to even say anything about you or to dialogue with them? It's a monologue that it's all about them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's a time for reflecting, and there's, it's wonderful you're using the colors. There's the black, and then you go to the level
blue.
That's a higher frequency of the blue,
mm-hmm.
which brings in more, obviously, of the light. Not quite yet there, but... And it's such a gentle process of going through these and accepting, again, what stage you're in and not making it wrong and not telling yourself you have to be perfect, but to be in the stage in an authentic way.
Right.
And tell it like it is. And the blue, so the blue stage is kind of a curious stage. You're seeking... self-discovery at that point. You're starting to come out of your cocoon, out of the cave.
That's correct. And that's the stage, that's a transitional stage, because we are entering a landscape of blueness that gives us that sense of hope. It's not the albedo, that whiteness, is what we're really in, that we know there's hope and love and all of that. But in the blue stage, which many of us will fall back into a much more common experience than we think, but it is when we're baptizing ourselves anew. It's when we get up in the morning and we've had a rough night. Either our minds have been working overtime of all the tragedies and the stuff that's in our lives, so we get up and we're washing our face, or we're taking a shower in the morning or bath, and that's where we're really trying to wash that the stuff of life that is not working in our lives. And so I would recommend that when anyone gets in the shower or washes their face or brushes their teeth, to think that this is a new beginning for them, that this is the potential of recreating a new way of being themselves from all the dark stuff that they had the day before. I think that's the promise that the lapis stage, that blue stage, brings to our lives.
And that overactive ego that judges us all the time, we can quiet that and put that on a shelf.
Exactly. Or work with it, working and integrating it. Hmm. Because I think the ego is a good thing. We need to have a sense of self. That's what Carl Jung would talk about, individuation, this individual. We need to have an identity, because that's what takes us out into the world as who we are, our personality. So it's very vital. It's that we haven't worked in integrating the ego that has been conditioned to be competitive or to be better than, or all these crazy negative things that have filtered into our lives. And so the way that the alchemists and the modern alchemists as well work with the ego and this idea is to nurture it into a higher sense of being, a higher consciousness, so that it can be integrated into a more soulful way of living, a higher self that says, yes, I know that these things happen to me, and yes, I know that I make things that irritate me, that I'm responsible for them. And that's all right, because I'm human, and that's what I'm here to learn. I don't have to be denying that I make mistakes. I don't have to be right, and I don't have to look good. I can be wrong, and I don't have to, you know, and I look good sometimes, and sometimes I don't. And so it's being gentle with the fact that we are on this journey of transformation, and that ego has a place, but it needs to be integrated with our higher purpose, and not one that needs us to stand out above everybody else. We don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you say to adorn yourself with lapis lazuli or sapphire energies. You know, we don't all have the crown jewels, but you know, we certainly can find something that's a blue gemstone, semi precious gemstone, that can help to bring up our frequency, and those are alive. Those minerals are alive, and
absolutely.
That's the alchemist, and knows how to use them.
Yes, and I think the alchemists were so aware of the importance not only of the substances and the minerals and the metals that they worked with, but the images. The images were what they called emblems, and they were their life stories. They were like their mantras in images. Very, very powerful, and I would recommend to anyone to pick up a book on alchemy, and we have some in ours, but we don't have as many as like your regular alchemy books, and look at those amazing pictures, because they're embedded with symbols of transformation, of how we fight the darker self within ourselves, which is the ego, to raise it to a higher vibration and become the knight. There's lots of pictures of knights and kings and queens, and that's really saying that we elevate ourselves to our higher self, to our higher persona.
Well, and I find it it was wonderful when we reached the next stage, the whiteness, the albedo stage, is that right? To not also get stuck there, because each stage, you know, is like you say, it's a dynamic. You're moving through it, not to get, you know, tempted to stay there.
Exactly, because this is always the temptation that if something is working good, and it's if it's food or if it's drink or if it's life, that if something is working, let's just keep it that way and let's not move from there. But what happens in that life is so dynamic, and as an example, in the albedo stage, we think, well, my gosh, you know, I've ascended, I'm flying in the realm of angels in heaven, and I have these insights, and I feel so pure. But if we stay too long in any one of these stages, and specifically with albedo, then we are in the intensity of the white light of day, and that purification can go to such an extreme that we become what the alchemists called calcined, and that means that all that the juiciness of life that we experience is drained out of it. It just sucks because of the high frequency of the whiteness. And we become rigid, and psychologically speaking, we become righteous. And when we become rigid and righteous, then we become brittle and fundamental. And right away, you start to feel that rigidity is not going to be able to cope with any wind of change that comes along. It's going to fall apart. And that's where we have what we call that fall from grace. And we see it in so many people that put themselves up on the high pedestal as being righteous and being fundamentally correct in everything they do, that, of course, they're going to fall because they're not angels. They're human.
Well, I like the way you put it. You say heaven is for angels and not for juicy women like you.
Exactly. That's perfect. And I just don't want to be stuck in the albedo. I mean, I love the albedo, but I also love that citronitas and the beauty of what it's like. I just had my grandbabies over, and it's just so wonderful because they're three and four and a half. And they are so citronitas. I mean, they stick their feet in the dirt, and they eat their ice cream, and they get it all over their face, and it's just...
It's all about expression, isn't it?
Yes.
It can go to the toxic hedonism. That's the other thing. Again, that stage is also... We've got to watch out for that pitfall.
Well, the citronitas is also you need a roadmap to be able to get yourself out of it if you don't have the right sense of your personality, that integrity that we talked about and the authenticity. And I think we find that in so many of the celebrities that fall prey to their own stories, that in the citronitas, because it is about the juiciness of life, that dark side of the citronitas is where addictions occur. That's where we go over the edge. And we have to have the stimulation. It can be overeating. It can be the drugs. It can be the sex. It could be any one of these things that in balance is absolutely wonderful. I mean, who doesn't want to experience the fullness of going to a restaurant and having a wonderful wine that goes with a delicious meal, and you're with company, and the party's going, and everyone's having a wonderful time. Now rev that up so that it becomes an addiction, and pretty soon, you know, you're just over the top with everything, and you lose yourself.
And the ego takes charge.
Absolutely. The ego loves this.
Yeah.
This is me. I want this. Don't take me away from this candy store. And pretty soon, we can't discern. We can't make wise decisions. We alienate family and friends that are telling us differently. And we don't need to bring up names, but that happens so much with the celebrities in Hollywood. And
what's
all
the way out?
Figures.
What would you recommend, you know, to some of those celebrities?
Well, I think that as you are a life coach, and I am, I think that they need to somehow catch their feet into reality. They need to dive into the waters of the lapis to be able to start to disengage from all of that, that ripening and the rotting and all that is happening in the citrine.
They need to go on a soul quest.
They could do that, yes.
Yeah.
Just and I think some do. They you need to separate away, need to go on a trip away from that kind of an environment and where there is the ability to be baptized over again, figuratively or in the imagination, where there are trusted, and see, this is the key, because they alienate themselves from people that they can trust, but to find people that they can trust to guide them through and away from that being stuck in that stickiness.
Yeah, and confessing and asking for help is a big one.
It is, because ego gets carried away with that. And I don't know how many people realize that the ego can kill us.
Mm-hmm.
It will kill us because it doesn't know that it's not supposed to. It is a negative ego out of control, caught in the citrinitas or in any of these other stages. In the rubido stage, for instance, which is the most beautiful, where we are, you know, absolutely whole within ourselves.
We're balanced, aren't we?
We're balanced. But then if we think, what happens is that if we're there too long, we dissociate, we get lost away from our humanity.
Mm.
And so we can't relate anymore to our humanity. And it's a strange thing that happens. So the beautiful thing of living a life of wholeness is that we accept that we're all in these stages at different times. Sometimes they're all informing us, but one stage will be much more predominant than another because of what is happening to us in our life at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the beautiful divine marriage that you paint in the last, the rubido,
rubido, mm-hmm. Like ruby.
That's, yeah, the ruby stage. It's so beautiful. You want to just kind of explore that a little bit and explain to people what happens?
What happens in the rubido stage is that we start to really align with our true essence, the essence that is driven by our soul story, the soul that is within the golden woman within each one of us, or the golden man. And there we know that what we speak about our truth is absolutely in unison with how we live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And these are moments that it's like they say, I'm in the flow, where everything just unfolds like magic, that movement, that there is no struggle, there is no challenge. It just, like people will say, I was at the right place at the right time, and everything just flowed together. That's a rubido moment. And this is where we can just feel the richness of what life has to offer us as human beings, that fullness of having the feelings of this spirit within us that is also manifesting on the outside as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you find the most appealing in working with the system of five stages.
What do I find most appealing? I think that it is very nurturing. That I've done a lot of self-help programs, and what has happened to me in the past is that though I have followed the steps towards enlightenment, somehow along the way I falter, and then I start to feel that I'm not good enough, that I must have done something wrong. So what we found as we started to work in this wonderful world of alchemy is that there are no steps to enlightenment. We are already enlightened. We just have forgotten. And so the alchemist and this process of the journey reveals that to us. So it's a very nurturing process that gives us lots of space to make mistakes and doesn't beat us for it. We can accept ourselves with all the flaws, with all of the cellulite, if you will, the wrinkles, and the bad hair days. It's everything there that embraces our humanity. And for me, that is very nurturing.
Mm-hmm. Well, does this also apply to men? I would assume it does, but, you know, I mean, it is about the alchemical woman. How does it connect to men's lives?
It is the same. The difference, or the reason it's the alchemical woman is because that Dr. Davidson and I had been working a lot on women's issues, and we felt that was a natural for us to start. And I feel that, personally, that women are so open and receptive to this kind of work that it was a natural for us. But with that said, many of the alchemists in the ancient world were men, and they were very dedicated to their soul journey. So we just haven't gotten around to writing The Alchemical Man, but that's not to say that that won't happen. Right now, that's our concentration is on women. But yes, this book is for every man or every woman and every woman's man, because we are, after all, in this world to have relationships, and relationships take all kinds of forms and all kinds of people, male and female, and others as well. We're talking about animals and planet and everything that vibrates with life we're in relationship with. And what better way than to be awakened to what this alchemical journey of transformation is about in relationship to all these other things.
Mm-hmm. Well, is the soul's journey for everyone?
I believe so. I think that if we are going to awaken to our greater self, that person that is fully realized, that understands the wholeness of their being, then I would say, I mean, why wouldn't someone want that journey? It's not for everyone. How can I say this? This isn't, everyone is on the journey, like it or not. And they can be stuck in any one of these stages for as long as they want, and that's their choice. I guess that's what I was trying to say. So the process of transformation can be hindered by our decisions to stay stuck in any one of these stages. However, the gift that this journey brings us is that if we surrender to this process and our higher self and know that we have the opportunity to fully engage our, you know, our fullness of who we are, then I would say, why wouldn't we want that gift?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly not a journey for sissies.
No, no, it's not.
And why else did we come here if we're not willing to, you know?
Well, I tell you, right now, from my life experiences, that being human is not for sissies. So going on this journey of transformation using alchemy as the model is right along the path of all humanity, because this world is tough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful, and that's what we've got, and I think we can embrace it with all of its flaws.
What do you see for 2012? What's your sense of that?
Well, it's funny you say that because I've been working on with some people on this, we call it the Earth Bridge Alliance, and we're looking at the possibility that the cause, and again, this is sort of out of track of the book and all, but my sense is that the cosmic impulse, that which is the creator of itself, okay, I call it the cosmic impulse, is at a point of reinventing or revisioning itself. So energetically, at the 2012, which of course is this precession of the equinox, where for 24, 26,000 years, this has been going every 2,000 years around the solar system in increments of 2,000 years, that at 2012 is completion. And so that completion means that anytime you end something, and this is the way I believe, that anytime you end something, there's always a beginning. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's a new beginning of tremendous potential that we haven't even begun to realize, that many of the people who are either channeling or interpreting what is going on are getting inklings that humanity and everything else that's part of this cosmic impulse will be elevated into a new consciousness, a consciousness that we only have glimpses of what that can be. But I'm sensing that it's what the alchemists called the oneness of everything that they were always striving to get towards. And I think that's what we as humans are striving to become much more awake of our own sense of the holy or of God or of the cosmos.
Mm-hmm. The bigger picture.
The bigger picture.
And life does go on, even though there's a completion of sorts. It's not about the end of time.
I've never seen it like that.
Yeah.
I always feel
most of us, you know, who are aware of the expansion in consciousness right now are seeing the theme of life going on. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind about that.
Right.
And, you know, it's the doomsday.
For me, I'm very excited that we get to be at the completion of this huge clock that's been ticking for 24,000 years.
Yeah. It is a convergence of a number of cycles, isn't it?
Yes.
Quite amazing. Quite amazing. And, yeah, and just, you know, have just trust that you'll be right where you need to be.
Yes, and I think that's the other thing that in alchemy was a very important thing, and that was the surrender of this of whatever this was, that the work that they were doing, and the work that we're doing, Carol, is this surrender to this higher source, that the unconscious has the answers, and in the unconscious is where spirit is, and spirit will speak to us if we're open, receptive, and that we trust and surrender to this higher impulse to become awake.
Mm-hmm. Well, people, you've been listening to my guest, Dr. Ramona Rubio, and this is Carrie L's HeartLink Show. And I want to thank you, Ramona.
Oh, my
pleasure. Have been fascinating, and just I love your energy.
Oh, thank you. I can see
where it's a very nurturing energy. And do you want to announce any? Let's get your website announced and anything that's coming up. If you have a workshop coming up.
Well, right now we are in the middle of a workshop, so that's ongoing. But we will be doing some teleseminar classes on the process of the alchemical journey, so they can get more information. It will be announced in our website, which is www.thealchemicalwoman.com, and you can also get our book there or at any bookstore. It's available in all of the bookstores.
Well, thank you, Ramona,
so much. My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, great. And I want to thank BBS Radio for allowing us to have wonderful shows like this and expanding our consciousness. And listen next time when I will have Terrence Gardino, who is an astrologer. So that should be fascinating. And please do go to my website at www.heartlinkinstitute.com. And thank you for listening, and I'm so glad we've been able to connect and broaden our horizons towards more freedom, light, and love. And have a great day. Bye-bye.